Welcome to Day Zero Update for June 2nd, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Logi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Rev Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a big week this week as we have the Summer Game Fest season kind of starting here. Especially with a PlayStation State of Play happening, with a number of big things to announce there, as well as a bunch of other news. We got some Microsoft news confirming a few things we expected to happen. We got news on maybe a certain HD 2D project that may not be what it seems right now. As well as some stuff that's coming out here in the near future that has gotten some dates and all that. So we'll talk about that stuff a bit, a little bit later. Before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a couple of the demos that have been on Steam. One is Skim, the shadow hopping platformer. There was a play test for that that people sign up for demo. It's maybe like 10, 15 minutes of content, but it kind of gets the core mechanics across in a really interesting way. So this is a game where you play as like a shadow creature. I guess that is able to hop between shadows. And like the main conceit is that, at least from the bits I've played, you're kind of hanging out in this dude's shadow, and then he kind of trips and crashes into something and sort of knocks you out of his shadow, to the degree you kind of have to hop into something else's shadow, and they don't really have any like dialogue or audio or anything to explain the story. So it just kind of seems like I got to get back to this guy's shadow, so I'm gonna hop between these different shadows of items and all that. But from where I am at, haven't quite gotten to that yet. But the core mechanics are pretty simple. You're looking around at these shadows and trying to jump from one to the other. It gives you a little bit of leeway in that you can fail once and then kind of get a second jump to get into a shadow. Beating the demo once, it kind of unlocks a hardcore mode. I forget what the specific name for it is, but where I think you start with 20 lives, and then you have to, I assume, beat the whole game without failing 20 times, which is by, you know, jumping out of a shadow, landing on the ground, and then not getting into another shadow by your second jump. That takes one off that counter. So that's kind of the gist there for that. But very neat game so far. From what I play, there's a lot of little tricks, like you're going through this kind of walkway with a bunch of shops and such on it, that, you know, you can get to this like bike rack that has some bikes in it, so you can kind of move between the little individual shadows pretty easily there. You can hit a button to kind of activate whatever item is there, so you can kind of maybe get people's attention and change their shadow a little bit. That is pretty cool kind of thing that you can do, but for the most part, it's a pretty simple concept. There's not a ton in the way of accessibility in the playtest they showed here, but I assume that the there'll be some more in the final game. But one of the neat things they do offer is that you can adjust the color scheme of the area you're in. It has, I think, four different colors. One for like the shadow, and there's like three others for different parts of the way the environments are shaded, or colored and shaded and all that. So you can, if areas are particularly troublesome for your either general visibility or your color blindness, you can adjust it that way to make it a little easier on you. I don't think it had any way of like saving those colors to like reapply in future areas that might give you trouble, or ways of saying like, hey, don't use this color. That kind of stuff could be pretty useful, but maybe that'll be in the final game. But yeah, they do have forms for submitting some feedback, so I might put those in just as a caution and everything. But you can go to skim.art, S-C-H-I-M.art, website, and it kind of lets you play around with that kind of stuff. It shows you, I think, different scenes, and you can kind of try it out and see how it looks. You can make it a garbage color scheme, mm-hmm. just like the nastiest looking colors that make it hard to see anything, but you know, that's your own fault for doing that. But yeah, it's a pretty cool little game. That'll be out, I think, July 18th on everything. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's on like PlayStation Plus or Game Pass or something at launch. So I have to keep an eye out on that one. Another one here I've played. This demo's been out for a good bit. They're kind of treating it like an early access launch with this demo, kind of letting people try it out, and they're updating it over time. I think the big thing recently is that they overhauled the art and some of the UI stuff to make it better like it is now. Mm-hmm. But Dungeons and Degenerate Gamblers is kind of basically Balatro, but what if you turn it into a blackjack kind of game with a little bit of D&D into it? So you're playing blackjack against another person. And so whenever you are facing off against another person, they'll have a thing on, you know, a coin that notes like they stand at 17. So if they hit 17 or higher, they will stand. Mm-hmm. And so let's say they hit 18. You'll look at your, you can, much like Balatro, kind of look at your hand that is waiting to be played, and you can be like, okay, I need six or less, and I have, you know, four of my eight cards here, so 50-50 chance. You can be like, okay, I'll go for it, and you see if you can get like a, if you get like an 18 to their 17, it subtracts, and so you'll do one HP of damage to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but if they bust, they essentially put up no defense, so you would put all 18 points against their health. So there's kind of that kind of a push and pull where you're trying to not bust, but trying to get as close. Mm. If you get a 21, you can get some health back mm-hmm. with that. And, you know, you're kind of looking around at your cards to see kind of what your possibility is. But sometimes it's best to just kind of stand and set up for the next set of cards you're putting down.
Mm-hmm.
But like Balatro, there are weird cards in this. I don't think they have a name for them just yet that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
But they have ones that will do a lot of weird stuff. There's, I forget if these were like library cards or like, you know, something like that, but it lets you steal one of the cards that has been played by the other player.
Mm-hmm.
And same as vice versa. That's how I got some of those from them. There's ones that let you manipulate the point values of the other player. The other opponents. Some that will increase in score as you use them. There's lots of weird ones that will play around with it. I did a video of this game about an hour long. Still hadn't like lost, so the rounds are not as short as Balatro is, at least when you for most of your runs that are going to fizzle out. Those mm-hmm. can be like 10-15 minutes, so not too long, but your good runs can probably take 30 minutes to an hour depending on how well your run is going and how much you're trying to figure out the math and all that. So yeah, you're playing around with a lot of that. There was a fun boss that had three cards, had two tens to get him a 20 at any point, and a 21 card that they do those kind of cards where it's like, oh, this is goes from anywhere from like 11 to 21's the highest I've seen. And it's like, oh, so he either gets a blackjack or gets a 20 or busts when he gets the 21 and the 10. And so I used the card that I had that bumped up the other players' cards by 1 point if you take damage. And so I essentially, let them win a hand, and that bumped the 21 up to a 22, so that would instantly bust every time it got used.
Yeah.
And then I did the same with the 10s, so those are up to 11s, which means if both of those got played, it was a bump, and it like had a stand of like 18 or 19 or something like that. So basically any of these cards would get played and bust, and that led to me winning pretty easily once I got that pulled. So there's a lot of fun ways you get to deal with this, you know, mess with the other player's hand and all that kind of stuff. I haven't lost yet, so I don't know how much of a rogue element there is to this, a roguelite element. But yeah, you kind of take on enemies, beat them, and then you usually either get choices of other enemies to take on or other events, like, you know, the ability to rest, maybe get some health back, or get drinks, which will do damage to you, but they let you, you know, get rid of cards, or go to shops to buy more cards, all sorts of different kinds of events, because you're going to like a shady basement to gamble in initially. And then as you beat that floor, you kind of move up to like an inn, and, you know, moving your way up to probably taking on some sort of, you know, casino boss or something. But it's a pretty cool idea for a game, and pretty smart. A lot of pretty smart stuff that they're doing here. And yeah, it's a pretty fun game. So looking forward to whenever they're getting that out. But I think the official version number they're at right now is like 0.21, something like that. So they're not pushing it too hard right now, but it is published by Yogg's Cast Games. So they got a pretty solid publisher there that's letting them kind of do what they need to. But yeah, definitely worth checking out that demo and seeing how it evolves over time. But it's got a pretty good aesthetic to it and music and all that. So definitely recommend it. If you're into blackjack or weird card games, weird deck builders, all that kind of stuff, it's doing some pretty cool stuff right now. So there's that. And then, yeah, played some Little Kitty Big City. I've beaten it, so I'm basically trying to get the rest of the achievements in that game, which aren't too hard to do. Though once they beat it, they say that they're going to mark stuff on your map that you missed, and I don't know if I just happen to do most everything they would mark, because there's nothing on the map from what I've seen. So I'm using some trophy guides or achievement guides to see what I need to do for this other stuff, but nothing really too big there. And then Rocket League, as the season winds out here later this week, I'm finishing up some things. I did make a purchase in the shop because they started putting some more licensed music for the anthems. And they got hip hop stuff this week from the 90s. So there's Push It. I forget what some, what is it? Don't Sweat the Technique. And for an early 2000s, it's a Outkast. I forget which Outkast song it is. It's one of them, one of their good ones. So I got those three. So now I don't have enough points for the battle pass, the rocket pass for next season, but I'll get some this week. So that's been pretty much it for me. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, the majority of my gaming this week has been pretty much completely overtaken by Apollo Justice: Ace Attorney Trilogy. I finally managed to have the time and the, you know, the funds to be able to get a copy for this on my PS5, and I finally did it. And it is, I mean, it's great. It's, I loved the original Apollo, the original Ace Attorney Trilogy. I loved that game. I played the heck out of it. And now I've got this, essentially the sequel series to it. And it's interesting in that you can definitely tell, like, there was a graphical upgrade between the first three games and this one. The gradients, especially in the coloring and the animation, is definitely better than it was in the first game. It definitely looks like it has more of a budget behind it. But it also does some things that are kind of unique compared to what the first three games are. For one thing, you have this thing where all of the evidence that you collect in this game, well, I say all of it, most of it is, are three-dimensional objects that you actually have to, like, turn over and examine to see if you can find, like, you know, unique characteristics like fingerprints or tags or, you know, cracks or things like that. which I'm pretty sure they had something like that in the expansion to the first Ace Attorney game back in the day. But this one's a bit different. And on top of that, Apollo, the guy that you're playing, he has this special bracelet that he wears that, for whatever reason, allows him to focus and perceive people's nervous tics when they're talking, and he can tell when they're lying. So, like, the first one you come across is a guy who's like a university student who typically, when he's giving his testimony on the stand, he'll, like, you know, finger and thumb through like a book or whatever. And when he's lying, you'll notice that he kind of nervously thumbs at one of the pages. And you can use that to sort of get him to admit what the truth is. And the truth ends up being kind of hilarious in hindsight. But then there's like a later one where there's a woman on the stand and find out that she kind of like fiddles with the ring on her finger when she's lying, or sort of nervously grabbing at the scarf around her neck, stuff like that. It's not extremely complicated, but for, you know, games like this, it's, you know, it's a lot. And also just story-wise, you know, it's got the same kind of, you know, Ace Attorney weirdness that you associate with this, all these weird, goofy characters in this weird, goofy universe where we're apparently supposed to be in America, but it's clearly the Japanese justice system. And a lot of Japanese law is involved. But, yeah, great game. I'm still in the middle of the first game in the trilogy, so I still got a little ways to go. But yeah, great stuff. And the other game I've been playing is a game, it was released a couple days ago as Early Access. It's called Sulaco, and it's a first-person shooter that was built on the GZ Doom engine. And for those of you who don't know what the GZ Doom engine is, it's a engine that is based around the original Doom engine that, you know, was put out by id on, you know, shareware and stuff. But it's more, slightly more advanced, and allows you to do some things that the original Doom engine could not do. Amongst other things, though, the reason this game has been getting a lot of just incredible amounts of word of mouth is the fact that even though it's built on the GZ Doom engine, it plays a lot more like Half-Life or the first Fear. Or, heck, for the record, Doom 3, to a certain extent. For one thing, the enemy AI in this game is very intelligent, very unlike what you would get in like Doom, because in the original Doom games, the AI for those games are frankly really stupid. You know, they see you, they stand in place, and then try to shoot at you. You know, in this case, no, they will dodge, they will group up, they will, you know, they will try to escape, they will, you know, you can't just go into a room guns blazing and expect to succeed. You will be killed very quickly. So you have to be intelligent about it. The other thing is that this game managed to do something that up to this point, games based on the GZ Doom engine were apparently incapable of doing, which is large maps that you can freely traverse without them stuttering. And yeah, you could totally do that. It's incredible. The fact that this game is based on the GZ Doom engine, even though a lot of places it doesn't look like the GZ Doom engine, like it all, is incredible. But yeah, it's legitimately an amazing game. It's both old school but also very advanced at the same time. I am legitimately impressed with this game, and yeah, it's really good. I'm really liking it. And I recommend it to anybody who wants to play a quote unquote boomer shooter that isn't just like a Doom clone. It's actually really good. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, I know it's been a while since I've been on the show. Obviously, like, there was Mother's Day a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I had to go to a luau that my friend spent months practicing for. So, you know, I wanted to support her. And then last week it was FanimeCon, which I'll go ahead and talk about a bit. So Fanime is one of the bigger conventions where I live in San Jose. And it's funny because like it always happens close to or during Memorial Day weekend. And at this time, like, you know, I went to San Jose State. So it's like downtown San Jose is filled with graduates. And then all of a sudden you have the graduates and then you have the anime nerds. And, you know, I remember when I was in school, like I'd always like make fun of them and stuff. And like, you know, now I've gone like every year for the past 5 years, just because like it's always a good experience going to the artist alleys and supporting the art that you see there, just seeing all the different cosplay. And I'm not the most hardcore anime fan, but what I like about anime conventions is that gaming has a big pull on the fandoms there too. So over on the smashpad.com website, I did a few stories. You know, first of all, I talked about the convention, but I also took some shots at the cosplay gathering specifically for Fire Emblem, Final Fantasy, Ace Attorney, you know, which Brandon just talked about, Persona. And yeah, it was a really good time. And it was interesting because, you know, I've gotten way into Yakuza over the last few years, and I thought it would have sort of a bigger presence. But honestly, the biggest surprise I saw was a lot of Baldur's Gate 3 cosplay.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
I mean, like, it's surprising for me because, you know, having more of that than Yakuza, which is actually a Japanese property, that was what caught me by surprise. Like, obviously, I talked about, you know, gaming had being a big thing, but I just didn't expect a Western RPG to, you know, have that kind of pull as far as the cosplay goes. But yeah, it was cool to see. You know, I support everyone in the, what they're doing, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. So definitely check out the site for a lot of the cool shots I took. Anyway, back to what I've been playing. It's been a sort of a little bit of a break after Hellblade, which I'll talk about in a bit. So, you know, the main game I'm playing just to like pass the time, and I've gotten really into it lately, is Hogwarts Legacy. Obviously, like, this game came out last year, and, you know, with the controversy surrounding J.K. Rowling being an absolute idiot, you know, that's definitely affected, like, the public notion for this game. But, you know, for those that actually picked it up, yeah, there's definitely some fun to be had here, especially for Harry Potter fans. The game takes place, I think it's over 100 years before Harry's existence. So, you know, you're not going to see, like, any of your favorite characters at all, except the fact that, you know, if you follow the stories, like, yeah, you know the Weasley family, they're there. The headmistress of the Hogwarts campus is a Weasley, things like that. And yeah, like, as far as living the Hogwarts campus life, it's definitely there. And I remember playing, you know, a bunch of the old Harry Potter games during the PS2 and Wii era. And the main thing I had fun with was just walking around Hogwarts. But Hogwarts Legacy is a lot more than that. Not only are you exploring Hogwarts, you're exploring the area surrounding it. You're exploring Hogsmeade, which is like the business and commercial district that the fourth years or third years are allowed to go to once they reach that age. And then you're also exploring Hogwarts Valley. So there's a lot of cool stuff there. And when I stopped playing last year, it was because other stuff came out. And now that there's a little bit of a break, I've been able to dive in a little more. At first, it was a little hard, you know. If you're someone that stops playing a game and all of a sudden you come back to it a year later in the middle, you're not gonna know what you're doing or what the story is. But I finally got into it. But the main thing that I'm really enjoying is like finally understanding the core loop of things. You know, not only is there obviously a narrative story to go through here, but you're also just a Hogwarts student, and the game actually encourages you to just go ahead and live life as a Hogwarts student. You get to choose whatever house you end up being. I'm a Pottermore Ravenclaw, so I went ahead and went with Ravenclaw, which, funny enough, also has the least amount of side quests for those of you into that stuff. But yeah, it's pretty cool in that regard. And then eventually, you know, you do unlock like the golden thread of things to do to advance the narrative, and you go to all sorts of dungeons which test your abilities with the magic and with all the puzzles and whatnot, and for the most part, the combat is easy. You should easily be able to kill a bunch of enemies that are overpowered, just as long as, like, you know, you keep spitting out the basic attacks. It's pretty cool using the Unforgivable Curses like Crucio, which is the Cruciatus curse that unleashes a lot of internal pain for anybody you use it on. Of course, you're not allowed to use it in Hogwarts because unforgivable curses can't be used on Hogwarts grounds. It's pretty cool seeing how they were able to make that work. But yeah, I've really enjoyed the story. But what really made me really get into it is the way it opens up. You know, obviously, I talked about how you can explore more than just Hogwarts. So like, once you actually leave the campus, you get access to things like a broom, or, you know, the hippogriff, and you can fly around. And just being able to fly around, you know, just really makes the traversal a whole lot better. I do think the menus are a little bit archaic. Like using things like such as the map for quick travel can be a little tiresome. But yeah, I think I finally like got the loop down, and I hope to finish this game sometime this week or the next. Obviously, we have Summer Game Fest this week, and I'll actually be there on location. So I'm not going to have as much time as I'd like. But yeah, Hogwarts Legacy is definitely a game that I've been enjoying. Next up is Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2. That game came out last week. I'm sure you guys talked about it. And yeah, I was a big fan of the original Hellblade. And this one is more of the same. I'm pretty sure you guys mentioned that as well. And the main thing that I got out of Senua's Saga was the fact that, like, in my opinion, this is the best looking game on the Xbox, if not the entire generation. Like, almost everything is photo-esque. Obviously, like, you have some stylistic art with the characters and, you know, a bunch of the living things. But, you know, just being able to see their horizons, they're just quite stunning to look at. And unlike the original Hellblade game, you have some areas that are well-lit, and, you know, you have some sun. So that's pretty cool. The main thing is that, yeah, it's more of the same, but I feel like the combat sort of got worse. I don't really remember how it went in the original, but I don't remember it being as monotonous as it is in this game. You know, you have the parry that you could use with the right bumper, and there doesn't seem to be much of a reason to use the dodge mechanic. And yeah, it's some random hack and slash stuff. And the main thing is that you don't really have much of an idea of how much health you have. So that can kind of be archaic as well. For the most part, the game has always been, or the series has always been, pretty linear. You know, there's only one way to go. But at the same time, the game doesn't actually tell you where to go either. You just have to follow like whatever contest clues you can have. And luckily, like, there's nothing super expansive. But, you know, comparing Hellblade 2 to Hellblade 1, there were these runes you could find that really gave you the idea of the world you were in as well as the world building. And I remember what pissed me off with the original game was I missed one rune that I knew where it was, but because I walked, or the camera made me walk somewhere else, I ended up missing that rune and I missed a platinum as a result. And the original game did not have a chapter select option, so I don't know if that was patched in later, but they definitely fixed that with Hellblade 2. So you can go back to any chapter you want after you finish the game. You can also have the narrator, the narration be changed to other characters. The game roughly took around 6 hours for me to complete. Again, I did not get all the runes, and I have no plans to. And I did enjoy my time with the game, but it's not something that I really am dying to get back into. But yeah, you know, Hellblade 2 is a game that I definitely enjoyed, but it's not the tentpole game that's going to save the Xbox by any means. And I know that, you know, with what Microsoft has had to deal with for the last, you know, few weeks, people are expecting like more out of them. And yeah, unfortunately, Senua isn't it. And, you know, it doesn't really come as much of a surprise because Ninja Theory doesn't really make games with like that much, you know, attention to detail as far as the gameplay goes. And the last time I can think of the time they did that was with Enslaved. And that was like more than two generations ago. But yeah, again, like the game was totally enjoyable, but it's definitely the quintessential Game Pass game, if you will, just because of how long it takes to actually finish. And yeah, speaking of short games, like Chris, I completed Little Kitty Big City. I'm the one that wrote the review on that game. And yeah, it's 2 hours of fun. I played the game on Switch. So my main thing was that it was a little hard to really get a grasp for the way that the cat actually controls. But like once you get through that, it just becomes a joy to play. This is a game that I was excited for ever since it was announced. And, you know, compared to a game like Stray, this was definitely more along the lines of what I wanted to do. You know, you get to live the life of a cat. You get to just jump on fences, knock pots down, annoy people who are there, have them drop things. And yeah, it was totally a lot of fun for me. The main thing, aside from the controls, that I didn't like was there's this pounce mechanic that you use to get these birds, which allow you to use them as sort of a currency. And what I didn't like was it always went slow motion for no reason. And I felt like, you know, I can get a lot of that time back by not having that slow motion animation. But yeah, the game is really enjoyable. It's all about getting back home, which is at the top of a condominium structure. And, you know, you just go about the town trying to get these fish that'll give you the energy to be able to make that climb. And the energy system is very much like Zelda is with the stamina system there. So yeah, really enjoyable, nice, cute game, the definition of a cozy title. So that's definitely one I'd recommend. And I've also played a little bit of Animal Well, thanks to PS Plus Extra. I haven't spent that much time on it. Maybe I've spent around an hour. And while I'm enjoying what I've played, I'm not in any hurry to get back to it. It's pretty much just like a love it or hate it thing. And I'm not saying I hate it, but like I just don't really see much of a reason to come back to it at this moment. But for what it's worth, I did enjoy what I played. I also picked up Paper Mario 1000 Year Door, but my brother's playing that right now. And at the same time, you're like, you know, it's a game we've already played, so I don't have much to say. And yeah, I know it was long-winded, but that's about it.
All right.
So yeah, let's get to some news.
Mm-hmm.
And first up, we have a new month, so we got some new PlayStation Plus news.
Mm-hmm.
And very, this is all part of their Days of Play promotion they're going right now. So they announced a number of things here. So, but part of that is some PlayStation Plus news, particularly the new games for Essential, the monthly games. We got here SpongeBob SquarePants The Cosmic Shake. That's the most recent of the SpongeBob games, and not a remaster of anything. So there's one to check out, a 3D platformer. We also have AEW Fight Forever. I'm surprised this hasn't been on a subscription service yet, but here we go. It's a monthly title, so I'll be interested in checking that out and see how it plays and all that. So there we go for that. And then the last one, and the probably the best of the bunch here, Streets of Rage 4. That is a brawler, the newest game in the series, and a very good game. A bit tough to it. Does not hold back any punches. Just punishes you to try and get through the game. So, yeah, a pretty solid lineup there for the monthly games. For the game catalog stuff, they have announced, let's see. Oh, yeah. Also, on Monday, it seems like they'll be offering a Roblox pack for PS Plus members. For, it looks like a character costume, Felix Freezebeard the Yeti. So that's fun for the people there. It seems like EA Sports FC 24 is not being taken down until June 18th, so you still got time to grab that one if you have to do so. But for the game catalog, for the extra, and or no, these are all for premium, I think. Let's see. For premium, they're adding some PSVR 2 games. Five of them that will be available on June 6th. There's Ghostbusters Rise of the Ghost Lord, Walkabout Mini Golf, Synth Riders, Before Your Eyes, and The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners, Chapters 1 and 2. All good games, all worth checking out. So that's cool. Also for premium, they're adding some new PS2 games for the first time in quite a while. Because I believe these are all done by the new company that is doing all the PS1 and PSP remasters. So they have available here on June 11th. Tomb Raider Legend, Star Wars The Clone Wars, and Sly Cooper and Thievius Raccoonus, which that last one's probably the best of the bunch here. It's a fantastic 3D platformer game with some stealth elements to it. That is a very good one. So that's cool. And then this is for extra and premium. Just a handful of games are announcing for. Let's see, at these specified dates. So Dredge for PS4 and PS5, which is a fantastic game that's available now. That was my number two game last year, so definitely worth checking out if you like mm-hmm. games that are spooky and just generally interesting, like fishing kind of games. Mm. Also available now as of May 31st, LEGO Marvel Super Heroes 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's another sort of open world-ish LEGO Marvel game, so you can check that out. Let's see, for June 5th, Cricket 24 for PS4 and PS5.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out. And then for June 7th for PS4 and PS5, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, the definitive edition. So that'll probably be available for a little bit. So there's that. And then, yeah, then they announced a new game, a trial for premium members,
mm-hmm.
WWE 2K24. So people can check that out and see if they want to spend money on the whole game or just play for an hour or two, I think it is. So yeah, some good stuff there mm-hmm. to check out for PS Plus members.
I know PS Plus, you know, all the premium options, they pretty much get a bad rap, especially when they're compared to Xbox Game Pass. But no, as of late, I've really been enjoying like what they've had lately. You know, I talked about Animal Well just now, and I downloaded Dredge, which is a game that, you know, I heard about a lot last year and never got a chance to try. Along with Dave the Diver, like a lot of these games are that are becoming available are not available on Xbox Game Pass, and they're really cool. So yeah, looking forward to getting to try these.
Yeah, and yeah, the Days of Play promotion they're putting on a bunch of stuff on sale.
Mm-hmm.
They do have some interesting stuff here: $50 off a PS5 or PS5 Digital Edition, and as well as I believe there's a promotion if you get it off of PlayStation Direct,
mm-hmm.
You get, I think, a year's worth of Netflix Premium. I guess they're top tier.
Yeah.
Which, from what I have seen, essentially just adds a credit to your account. So if you do not have the top tier of Netflix, mm-hmm. it'll last longer because it's just going to apply to whatever tier you're on. So that's a pretty good offer because that's like a good $200 of value there on top of the other stuff. If you're going to get a PS5 or PSVR2,
mm-hmm.
Because the PSVR2 headsets and the Horizon Call of the Mountain bundle are $100 off, so you can check that out for pretty decent prices. Let's see, $10 off all PS5 console covers and $80 off the Marvel Spider-Man 2 Collector's Edition PS5.
Mm-hmm.
So some pretty solid deals there, as well as some deals for PlayStation Plus. Doesn't seem like they're offering deals to extend your subscription, but if you do not have PS Plus, you can get up to 30% off a 12-month plan. Mm. Or the discounts for upgrading to Extra or Premium if you do not have those yet. So there's some decent options there as well. And yeah, on the storefront, they just have a bunch of games on sale. I think it's Unicorn Overlord just got its first sale recently. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. What else just got its first sale? I forget, but a lot of interesting stuff on sale. So yeah, some good stuff to check out there. Yep. For other news, Redfall has finally gotten its final update.
Mm-hmm.
It's ready now, so you can check it out. Let's see, it adds the ability to pause in a solo game because before it was essentially always online, so you couldn't necessarily pause the world for that. There's also an offline mode so that you do not have to be online constantly to play it. Mm-hmm. Worry about getting kicked if you have any issues with your connection.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, it also revamps a few of the game's major systems. Yeah, the neighborhood system has been retooled and equipped with a new meter called the Community Standing, which increases upon unlocking a new safe house, completing safe house missions, rescuing civilians, or killing an underboss. And so, yeah, there's stuff for that. And also introduces Elder Nests and a bunch of other stuff as well. So that's neat. They get to send the game off as well as it could be, but not necessarily any way for that game to kind of get redeemed in any way. So. Well, that's all Microsoft's responsibility, so there you go.
All right, awesome. I mean, you know, I just wish that this game had not been able to had just the whole story of this game's development is just kind of depressing. Like yeah. it's very much out of their wheelhouse, and yet for financial reasons, they basically made them make this game, which is sad because it has a very interesting and great premise, you know. And yeah. because of, you know, the way corporate played it, they completely fucked it up. It's just, and now, you know, the developers who made it, who had to do all this under their orders, have to suffer for it.
Yep. So, yeah. There you go. But we got some stuff here that has some dates that is coming
yep.
up. First up here on June 4th, The Legend of Heroes Trails Through Daybreak has a demo.
Yes.
That will be out for PS4 and Switch. I think it's the first one of these they've done a demo for.
I think it is. Yeah.
And it seems like the save data will carry over. So
February 2. But yeah, whenever these companies release a demo, you know what that means. Pretty much done. So
yeah. The game, apparently the full game is supposed to come out about a month later in July. I think yeah. July 5th. But yeah, yeah, I'm legitimately, obviously, I mean, we're... It's well known that all of us here at Smash Pad are huge fans of the Trails series. and part of the reason why we're especially excited for this one is because this is the first game that takes place entirely in the Republic of Kalbard, which up to this point has been a part of the game's universe that has only been sort of talked about and hinted at from afar. And now we actually get to like see what life in Kalbard is like and to get like more of its history and, you know, the overall politics that's going to be involved. And it's going to be really timely because one of the things about the Republic of Kalbard that you constantly hear about in all these games is that there's this really distressing, like far-right populist movement that is trying to, you know, stop immigration into the country. And it's like, wow, how wonderfully thematic, you know? And then there's also the fact that they're currently ruled by a populist president who may or may not be morally dubious. And it's like, yeah, Roy Gramhart, the guy who's currently the president of the Republic. And it's like, wow, this there's a lot of themes going into this game that seem very familiar. But yeah, I'm really happy to finally play this game.
Yeah, I mean, another reason why I'm looking forward to it, aside from the fact that, you know, as you mentioned, it's going to take place in the Republic of Kalbard, is the fact that I believe this game also changed up the battle system a little bit.
Yep, yes, it did.
A lot of the fans who played that one also say that, and they also say this about a lot of the other quote-unquote first games in every saga, is that it's actually a good place for newcomers to get into the series. And, you know, be that as it may... that's also pretty cool, just because, like, yeah, this series, you know, we've talked about it for years. It's just one of the best RPG games out there, and yeah, I'm looking forward to just getting my hands on the demo. I don't know if the progress moves forward, but yeah, just looking forward to trying it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, the save data will carry over, mm-hmm. And yeah, just to give you an idea of how long we've known the release date, it was back in March. They announced that,
yep.
So but the demo we didn't really necessarily know was going to happen, so
mm-hmm. Yeah,
but you'll be able to check it out this week,
mm-hmm.
on Tuesday.
Yeah, and honestly, part of the other reason we love this series is just the sheer balls that they have over at the developers, that they've managed to have this super story heavy RPG that's been going on for god almost 15 years now, right? If not longer.
Yeah, yeah, since the PSP days.
Yeah.
Even longer for us, being three games behind.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's dedication.
Yeah, so there's that. Also coming up here, let's see, June 25th for PS5 and PC Until Then will be out. This is the Philippines set narrative adventure game. Coming from publisher Modus Games and developer Polychroma. So that's cool. That'll finally be out. I think it got delayed a little bit. But now it has a date. So it'll be out here in a few weeks.
Yeah. finally looking forward to getting my hands on this one. Obviously, I'm Filipino American, so it's going to mean a little more to me. But yeah, it's molded in a bunch of other side-scrolling puzzling games in similar fashion, games like Night in the Woods and things like that. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it. There is a demo on Steam, but yeah, I'm just going to wait it out.
Yeah, so there you go. Then right. on July 4th, we get the next game from miHoYo, Zenless Zone Zero.
Yep.
This is the one you've seen that's been set in like urban areas.
Yeah.
As a action RPG of sorts, though. Yeah, it'll be out on PS5, PC, iOS, and Android on July 4th. So you can celebrate the 4th of July by playing a Chinese free-to-play game. So there you go. They do have a $10 pre-order edition to get some bonus items in it. But otherwise, you can check it out when it's out next month. So that's probably going to be a pretty interesting game.
Yeah.
So there you go for that. And then the next one here, August 1st, we finally got a date for Tomba Special Edition. That'll be August 1st for PS5, Switch, and PC. And the PS4 version will be available at a later date. This is going through Limited Run Games. They're publishing this. So that is interesting to see. Really like the original game.
Tomba was a game that I definitely had some fond memories of. I would go over to my aunt's house because they were the ones with the PlayStation. And I actually had more fun with Tomba than I did with Crash Bandicoot. So, yeah, that's
fun. Yeah, Tomba was like the first game I ever played on a PlayStation. For the time period when it came out, it was kind of a big deal, especially when it's your first, game that you're playing on the PlayStation and you see like full motion graphics on a console for the first time.
Yeah, it has just wild animation to it. Tomba does not jump around like a Mario or anything like that. He kind of puts his stomach out as he's kind of, kind of jumping like if he was parachuting or something like that, or, jumping out of a plane kind of thing. But it's like a 2.5D, kind of an adventure Metroid kind of game, where you're opening up these areas by doing quests from people and doing a lot of exploration. Being able to get around these environments in ways that you weren't necessarily doing a ton of at this point. So yeah, this also made by the guy that was working on the Ghouls and Ghosts series. So very kind of similar style to it, but less focused on like a Castlevania kind of setting to more of a anime setting. So yeah, that's pretty cool. But yeah, it seems like they have save anywhere, rewind options, analog control, museum with a bunch of bonus materials, remastered soundtrack, and an interview with the creator, Tokuro Fujiwara. So that'll be cool to see. And hopefully it does well enough that they get to do a sequel, do the sequel, because that's also a weird game because they essentially did another one, but with all 3D models versus a lot of 2D sprites here. So that's a game to check out. And now we get to some more industry news. First up here, the thing that we had pretty much all assumed, that Call of Duty Black Ops 6 will be on Game Pass at launch. Not really a huge surprise there. They have confirmed that after leaks and all sorts of such were happening. It's basically all but confirming this, so I don't know if they were hoping to hold it for the Black Ops 6 Direct that's after the Xbox Game Showcase, but yeah. There you go. We'll see more at the Direct on Sunday, next Sunday. I'm trying to see if there's anything else here. No, that's pretty much all this has. It has a little reveal trailer attached to this, but not much else information-wise. So you'll be able to check that out. That'll be an interesting game, because if you have the base Game Pass tier, you do not get online play. So I'm curious what How many modes you get to play? Is it just campaign, or is there any more local multiplayer stuff in there?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but that seems like a game that's very much geared for the tiers that have multiplayer options on there. So,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. And for more Xbox news, the developer Toys for Bob that split from Activision and Microsoft right around when the acquisition was finalized, they have announced publicly that their next game is being published by Xbox, which was not a huge surprise. That was very much the thing they were putting out when they announced their independence, is that they were looking to make a deal with Microsoft to publish their next game. But just wanted to have more control over their own studio. So that is good for them. I assume it's going to be a platformer of some kind. Because this is the studio that's been doing mostly that. They did the Skylanders games.
Yeah.
Crash Bandicoot 4, and then Crash Team Rumble is the only,
only
recent game that's any different other than being a support studio for Call of Duty stuff. So, yeah. Excited to see what they're doing, but I think that's going to be a few years off before we see anything out of that. So, yeah. But let's switch over to Square Enix. They posted on, I think this was Memorial Day here, but in Japan it's Dragon Quest Day. I assume the launch of the original Dragon Quest was that same day back in whenever the 80s. But they basically posted a short video showing the logo for Dragon Quest III. Saying the legacy begins, and showing that it'll be coming to the Switch, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. And there's speculation going along with this that the reason this game's been taking so long is that they are likely expanding it to be a trilogy from Dragon Quest 1 to 3, which would be cool to see, because that's, you know, we don't really have those games all that accessible unless you have a Switch that has the the weird mobile versions, the weird art to them. But yeah, this is kind of in more stylistically in the vein of the recent 2D HD stuff Square Enix has been making for Nintendo, with Octopath Traveler and Triangle Strategy and that kind of stuff that has a really cool art style and fits should fit this game pretty well. But yeah, the twist is that Dragon Quest III reveals itself to be a prequel to the first two games, so it would make sense to maybe do a trilogy of that, all in one package. But
we'll see.
I think people are expecting the Nintendo Direct that's supposed to be happening here in the next couple of weeks will be part of that. So we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, especially after, you know, when Square Enix made the announcements that they wanted any more exclusives. It's good to hear that we're still getting that one, because I know people were scared, even though it's Dragon Quest. Nothing's gonna happen. Yeah, I've been looking forward to that game for a long time, and I'm happy it still exists.
So yeah, let's see what's next up here. Oh yeah, Amazon Games has announced a new publishing deal that they will be partnering with the Studio Maverick Games, which was made above a handful of former Forza Horizon devs that formed about 2 years ago, I think January 2022. We talked about this. And so, yeah, their first project will be a story-focused open-world driving game. So not really too far off of what they were working on before, but now they'll be doing that for Amazon and probably for all the consoles and PC. That still seems to be probably a couple more years off, but good on them for getting a solid publishing deal. At least we'll see. I think Amazon's announced a bunch of publishing deals for like the new Tomb Raider game and all that, and those are still far enough off. We don't necessarily know how well supported those will be, but that'll be interesting to follow. So. There you go, in case you're wondering what that studio has been working on. So there you go. Let's get to some negative news here. First up, part of the Sony financial news that happened a few weeks ago, there was an interview with Neil Druckmann sort of talking about various topics as being one of the key creative people within the Sony first party studios and all that. And it got a lot of blowback because of quotes about AI and things about their next game, redefining what games can be, kind of stuff. A lot of weird, high and mighty quotes that people then took to be like, oh, Neil Druckmann's got a huge ego. This is the sort of bullshit he would say and all that. And he had to come out and show the transcript of the conversation he had and talking about how it was a very rambling kind of thing. But never really said the specific quotes that people were getting angry about. And so as a result of all this kind of blowback, Sony deleted the interview, got rid of it. Cause it was, you know, featuring too much, PR additions to things he said that he never really said, which is not uncommon thing, but typically you would want to run it back, against to the person that you're interviewing, make sure it's okay and all that. It seems like he probably did not get that and that they wanted to fit. It's usually this kind of stuff is to talk about the focuses that the company has for the next quarter or year or whatever they're doing. So it's not too surprising, but yeah, this seems like the people editing this interview did not maybe have the best intentions behind all of it. And kind of just created this whole push for artificial intelligence that I don't think any of the Sony studios are heavily invested in.
Yeah.
In the way that Sony would maybe like for investment purposes. But the studios are probably mostly testing it out, seeing what it can do, but not like basing games around it. The next Naughty Dog game is not going to be, you know, fully based on AI or anything. But yeah, it's a bad look. As they put out here, in re-reviewing our recent interview with Naughty Dog's Neil Druckmann, we found several significant errors and inaccuracies that don't represent his perspective and values, including topics such as animation, writing technology, AI, and future projects. We apologize to Neil for misrepresenting his words and for the negative impact this interview might have caused him and his team. Coordination with Naughty Dog and SIE, we have removed the interview. And so, hey.
Yeah, and that's why this kind of stuff should be left to the press and the media. We're seeing, you know, for the last few weeks, we've seen companies get bought out, you know, whether it be by IGN. And, you know, I'm not saying IGN is bad, but you know, obviously it's like we've seen a lot of just a lot of condensing in the industry, and that includes our media partners. And yeah, basically what we saw here was, you know, Sony interviewing an employee and then trying to make it more marketing thing, and they went too far. And yeah, as we dove closer and closer to an AI world, this is where stuff can easily be mistranslated and you have shit like this. So yeah, hopefully that makes these companies think again. And like, you know, the hard part here is like, you know, just we'll take Neil for example. Like, he is somebody who is in the public eye now just because of how popular The Last of Us TV show is, you know, with Hollywood and things like that. And you know, when you're a game developer, you know, like, obviously you want to make it big, but, you know, doing things like talking to the media is not something that you're often expected to do. But Neil Druckmann is in the public eye, and I'm sure that he also wants to turn on his you know, game developer self again and just be able to ignore these requests. But it's also a request that came from Sony, not from, like, you know, Kotaku or something. So yeah, it's just unfortunate how this all happened, and they could have done better just by, you know, not having this done. But, you know, at the same time, people got to talk and got to publicize somehow, and it's just tough to do. So it's just messy all around. You hate to see it.
Yeah. It seems like they should have had, like, the people running the PlayStation blog, like, going over this for whatever changes they might make, because otherwise it looks like they had, you know, marketing people running over this, not people with editorial history to them. That just shows when you make this kind of stupid mistakes. So yeah, there you go. We'll move to another bad bit of news. That it looks like Take-Two in spite of, you know, getting a number of studios that were owned under the private division label, are just seemingly looking to sell it off, likely. That or just shut down the whole thing, as it's a part of the company that does not produce major hits, as they're generally indie focused, as they've had, you know, Kerbal Space Program 2 and Rollerdrome and Olly Olly World from Roll 7, and more recently No Rest for the Wicked from Moon Studios, games that do probably decently well, but not amazingly well, at least at the moment. And Take-Two seems to be like, in there, we need to cut you know, bad money in the company, and private division seems like the thing they're looking to cut in some way or sell. And that's a shame, because they've had a lot of good stuff under private division. They still have some stuff in the works with Game Freak. Their next game that's not Pokemon game is coming through private division, as well as some other stuff there. So yeah, that's not looking great for the people that are remaining at private division.
Yeah, and now I know why private division hasn't my application.
Yeah, they're probably not looking to hire anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's not great, especially when they're I don't know where I was gonna go with that, but yeah, it's a shame. We need more indie initiatives at these big publishers, because they can be typically a better supportive company for those kind of studios than your average indie publisher. But this time did not work out.
Yeah.
And yeah, this was at with the CEO Strauss Zelnick, who was being very weirdly coy when the news about shutting down Roll 7 and Intercept Games, and basically being like, well, we didn't shut down the studios because technically they weren't shutting them down until June 28th, which is like, no, you're just lying here about things being, trying to be super cute about stuff, and that's not how people like their CEOs to be. They want at least some truth, even if it's not good news. But we'll move on here to some good news. The State of Play has happened. It was on Thursday afternoon. And so we'll go through and check out some of these games here. A lot of interesting stuff here for these games. But yeah, they opened up with our first look at Concord. This is the sci-fi game that we haven't really known too much about, other than it was probably going to be a live service thing. Which ended up being the case, as it is a 5v5 multiplayer shooter, first-person shooter. So kind of has at least gameplay vibes of like an Overwatch, but more sci-fi characters doing some weird stuff, but you have a lot of similar kind of roles and such. They've talked about in their blog post that they have 16 characters, I think, at launch, and the characters will stay free when they're adding them to the game, but they will have something they'll charge for. I think the game is probably going to be require payments of some kind. I don't think they've put it up for pre-order yet, so that might be happening here soonish. But the game will be out on PS5 and PC August 23rd, with a beta in July, I think, that will be for people pre-ordering the game. So we'll have to see about that. Well, yeah, that looks pretty neat from what I've seen here. So it's got some nice nice stuff going on. So there's the first big game. Then they showed off God of War Ragnarok is coming to PC on September 19th. It'll include all the content that the PS5 version has. So that's good. People can check that one out. Then we got our first big third-party game, Dynasty Warriors Origins, that is coming to PS5, Xbox, and PC next year. This is kind of a prequel game. Yeah, featuring a new character who, I don't know if that's a real character or if one for the Dynasty Warriors stuff. But yeah, they're going to be showing more of that at some point.
Yeah.
It looked pretty decent. It's built for the new console, so it's not like that kind of old engine they've been showing for the last several games.
Yeah, and it also looks like it's going back to the stage, you know, individual stages instead of the last game that had that dead, barren, open world. So, yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. That looks pretty
And it neat. Also gets definitely a graphical upgrade. I'll give it that.
Yeah. Which is good. Mm-hmm. You get a lot more, looks like more destructivity to it.
Oh, yeah.
So that'll be cool. Then we got Infinity Nikki, which I guess is like the fifth game in this series the fifth installment in the beloved Nikki series that we've not really gotten much of here, but it is a free-to-play, I believe it's going to be a free-to-play open-world dress-up adventure game, where it's kind of probably like a cozy game of sorts, where you're playing as a girl, or you can probably be any sort of thing, but... It features Nikki and Momo, who embark on a new adventure to travel across the fantastical nations of Miraland, each with its own unique culture and environment. Yeah, you meet new people and creatures and collect outfits and all that kind of stuff. So I believe the other games have been kind of gacha games, so this is probably going to be pretty similar to that.
Yeah, probably.
So, but this one looks pretty neat. I don't know how the end product's going to be, but they're supposed to have a beta test here in Q3, so we might see more of that sometime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got Ballad of Antara for PS5. This is a free-to-play. I assume it's a Souls-like. The vibe is very Souls-like. But they've announced they're coming to multiple platforms, but PS5 is the first one that's been confirmed. It'll be out next year. They describe it as a dark fantasy action RPG from Infold Games. I believe is also publishing that Nikki game. So, that looks pretty neat. People are wary of the free-to-play aspect of it. So there you go. Then we got a couple of PSVR 2 games, Skydance's Behemoth. This is a new game from the developer of the Walking Dead Saints and Sinners games. Focuses on melee combats and hand-based physics. So this is kind of a neat looking game where you're doing a lot of melee fighting of enemies, and then there's this giant behemoth that's hanging around that's gonna mess with you, so you gotta deal with staying away from it or attacking it or whatever you're gonna do. It looks pretty cool. For that, so there's that. That's PSVR 2 and PCVR sometime this fall. Then we got to look at Alien Rogue Incursion. That is also for PSVR 2 and PCVR. This is the big new Alien game. It's a single-player action horror game. Let me see. Yeah, I don't know too much else. I would assume by the name it's got some roguelike elements to it. But we don't really know any more details. But looks like that could be neat. This has come from Servios, who's done a bunch of other VR stuff. So that could be pretty cool. That's supposed to be out this holiday. Then we got into some more regular games. Marvel Rivals is officially confirmed for PS5. It's also coming to Xbox and PC as well. That is the big Overwatch-style Marvel game. With a bunch of heroes in it. Like for this announcement, the new thing was Venom, and I forget who else was confirmed for this, but there's a exclusive Spider-Man costume for people getting it on PS5. They got a closed beta in July, so people will be able to check it out on consoles here pretty soon. Then we got Where Winds Meet. This is a Northern Song Dynasty set open world action RPG. So that's pretty neat. I assume this is a Chinese studio. It has some really good looking action to it. It's got some Souls like vibes to it, as well as a bunch of side stuff from what they're showing. But Yeah, not really too much action and or and like information you can glean from the trailer. So, yeah. Yeah, it's set in ancient China at the 10th century during the tumultuous era of the Five Dynasties and Ten Kingdoms.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a wuxia kind of action game. So,
which is, I'm all about that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely excited for that one.
Yep. Then we got, new trailer for Until Dawn's remake, which still looks really good. That'll be PS5 and PC this fall. That's supposed to be a remake with some new scenes and such added to it. So that'll be cool. We like that original game. So it'll be cool to see what they do with that. But yeah, there you go for that. Then we got an update on Path of Exile 2 that'll be coming to consoles. And early access on PS5, Xbox Series, X and S, and PC, late 2024. The weird thing, so this will be in early access. They are also confirming that, you'll be able to play local co-op. So you can play both on your account if you want, or two people can log into two separate Path of Exile accounts on the same console to keep their progress separate, which is neat. It also has full cross-play and cross-progression, so you can kind of move around on platforms as you need to and play with people on whatever they're on. And so, yeah, they're fully making this game on, a next-generation engine, so it looks much better than the original game did. They are also, I believe, adding new expansions that'll be a part of this game and the original game. So they're not separating the content they're making, at least outside of the base campaigns you're playing through.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting path to go. Cause I guess these expansions are not be like super story oriented that, pushing the canon along. But I don't know exactly how all that works. I've played a decent bit of the original game, but not a ton of it. But that sounds neat. Diablo 4 is kind of floundering, not really doing all that much interesting, though they just overhauled the loot stuff again. So
yeah,
maybe that'll make it more entertaining. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows?
But then we start getting to more of the heavy hitters. Silent Hill 2 got a date of October 8th for PS5 and PC, and people have been simultaneously excited and angry about this game. Which is the Silent Hill way at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a developer out there that can make the game that they want. But Bloober's not the one that a lot of people want. So there you go. They also had a Silent Hill stream after the State of Play to show off more stuff, I guess, especially with the new movie that's coming out. And some of the other projects, I don't know what all was in there, but I definitely know they showed more of this. So it'll be $70. They have a deluxe edition for $80 that includes a digital art book, soundtrack, and a pyramid head mask pizza box for James. What the hell is that? I think it's like a face mask, it looks like. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a very weird phrase that I just said, but okay. They got to get people to pay for something.
Yeah.
Especially when they want them to pay more for it. So that also includes 48 hours of early access. So people can pay more to be angry about it before it launches. So that's probably what they want. But yeah, there has been a character that's in this game whose look kind of changed a little bit. That has gotten
the usual Gamergate
crowd super mad, because it's like, why'd they make her a little heavier and look slightly different? And it's like,
I'm like, dude, she's like a teenager that was sexually assaulted, dude. What the hell?
Yeah. And it's like, it's not that different.
Yeah.
Of a thing. But of course they put out their ideal versions of take her sexier looking. It's like,
stop it. Why?
I forget who it was on Twitter. It was like, why do these people keep yesifying these characters?
Because that's their incredibly shallow view of what beauty is supposed to be. That's why. Also, because most of them have never actually interacted with real women. Like, let's just be incredibly honest here. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, the sexist stuff aside, my impression of the game, and I'm not even someone who's big on graphics, is it just didn't look good, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't look very... It looks very last gen.
Exactly. When you compare it to something like even Infinity Nikki, or, yeah, you know, you don't want to compare it to Resident Evil, but you kind of have to.
It's, yeah,
not even close. So that's one thing, like, I'd be worried about on that side. But yeah, I've never played a Silent Hill game, but I've seen them in action. And, you know, going back to previous generations, when it was at its prime, it oftentimes looked better than Resident Evil. Now it doesn't. Mm-hmm. That's,
yeah,
not going in for it.
Yeah. But this is what Konami has reaped as they have gutted their internal studios,
mm-hmm,
so much that they don't have much of them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the team that made the original games to keep making them, so they hire new teams, Western studios, to make them that, you know, the fans don't like, really, for most of them. So you end up in this situation where nobody's really happy other than probably Konami making a bunch of money off of these people. So there you go. But for good news, Monster Hunter Wilds, we got a gameplay show trailer here. So...
Mm-hmm.
Looks fantastic on it's PS5, Xbox, and PC.
Mm.
Looks really good, taking a lot of cues from obviously evolving things from Monster Hunter World as well as Rise. Instead of having a like dog creature that you can ride around, you have a bird, essentially a chocobo of sorts, that can fly around and jump and do all that stuff. You have,
mm-hmm,
a lot of the same kind of mechanics from the last couple of games. In this, that is pretty cool to see. That'll, mm-hmm, give you more mobility and all that. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, they've got 14 weapon types in this, which I think are all probably stuff that's been in the last couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
They also say here, Monster Hunter Wilds players who link their Monster Hunter World save data can receive special bonus items.
Mm.
Includes the feline leather set, palico armor, and feline acorn spade pelica weapon for linking world, yeah, Monster Hunter World base game save data. And let's see, a different set of pelica armor and weapons for save data from Iceborne.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they've shown off a good bit of this. It has some really nice looks to it. And yeah, a lot of this initial area of this show is very much not green. Like, you see a lot of Monster Hunter areas.
Mm-hmm.
It looks more like maybe a desert-y area, kind of.
Yeah.
Like that kind of brown grass to it, which looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this game's shaping up. It's still aiming for next year, but still looks really good. So we'll probably see more of that here over the next few months.
Maybe, yeah.
And then we ended off with a big surprise as Team Asobi finally announced what they've been working on, which is their first big Astrobot game,
mm-hmm,
for the PS5. That'll be out September 6th.
Cool.
And very much kind of takes a lot of what they've done with the last two games and blows it up into a bigger game.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the details they have, I think like 6 worlds and 80 stages in it. You're collecting a bunch of like special weapons to use in some of these areas. He has like boxing gloves to fight a boss, and a bunch of other things that he collects along the way.
Mm.
As well as, much like in the Astro's Playroom, meets up with a bunch of other bots that are cosplaying as other PlayStation characters.
Mm.
And so there's like a big bit where he runs into Kratos bot, who tosses him an axe that Astrobot drops immediately. Mm. So the pre-orders for that will open up here on the 7th, I think, later, mm-hmm, this week. So we'll find out if it's a full $70 game, or maybe they'll go cheaper, mm-hmm, to appeal to more people. We'll see. But yeah, they have a lot of cool touches to this. A lot of bosses that are returning from Rescue Mission and Playroom. And yeah, like some fun stuff where like I believe the big hook here is that Astrobot's DualSense ship has been destroyed, and he has to collect the pieces for it. As well as he rides around on the on a PS5, a spaceship spacefaring PS5, which people thought was a hint of the PS5 Pro, but it's just the PS5 without the case on it. So yeah.
All right.
Yeah, looks really cool. Nice to see Sony publishing a big 3D platformer again.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the state of play. Brandon, what did you like out of this?
Obviously, Where Wind Men's Meet was kind of interesting to me. Alien Rogue Incursion looked kind of interesting. And also Path of Exile, too. Pretty much, I think, honestly, both it and its predecessor have pretty much been, honestly, completely superior to basically anything that Blizzard has put out in the Diablo franchise over the last few years. So, yeah, that's also definitely something I'm excited about. And, yeah, that's pretty much it.
How about you, Danrib?
Yeah. You know, PlayStation always, like, sort of puts themselves into a corner with their... because a lot of them are having a lot of, like, predictions that are more ideal for a PlayStation showcase, which is different than a state of play. People just don't know the difference. But yeah, I thought starting with Concord was interesting. You know, this is a game that we've known about for a while, and not knowing what it was end of the trailer was an interesting move. I saw a lot of comments saying, oh, Sony couldn't afford the Guardians of the Galaxy. But I don't know if it would actually succeed as a Guardians game. So I'm someone that's actually more positive for this one. It looks really solid. The combat looks pretty good. And yeah, I'd be willing to give it a try. How much it actually, you know, they talked about pre-orders. So if we're talking about pre-orders, I'm not assuming that this is going to be free to play. So there's that. And yeah, I'd be willing to give it a try. God of War for PC is always a good announcement, except for the whole you know, PS network kind of stuff. And I really liked Infinity Nikki. I didn't know that it was fourth or fifth game in the series, and that makes me want to go back to the other ones. But if it's like a gacha, like you guys were saying, then I'd be a little... But I did like the platforming aspects and the exploration aspect. And like, even the fashion looks pretty interesting too. So that was one that I really enjoyed. Marvel Rivals is to when it releases, just because it just looks so tight, and I'm looking forward to the closed beta coming up. And Where Winds Meet was all... Until Dawn is a game that I don't really feel like I need to play again, and the game does not look... I'm not really sure what my pulse is on that one. I already talked about Silent Hill. And Monster Hunter looks interesting, mainly because with the way it's being presented, it looks like it's more story-based than previous entries in the series, which, you know, I'm more excited about. But also, that's a 2025 game, and I don't really need to hear about it. Same with Dynasty Warriors, because, like, we already know what Dynasty Warriors game is. And Astrobot, you know, interesting having that last, because this was rumored the whole week that it would be coming soon, and we finally saw it, and that trailer blew my mind. You know, platforming is my favorite genre, so just being able to look forward to getting my hands on that one, especially, you know, after Astro's Playroom. Like, if you have a PS5 and you never played Astro's Playroom, you owe it to yourself, because that game comes packed in for free. It's amazing to play, and if you're a PlayStation fan, it just is a great love letter to the entire game. So I love that they're still including all of those PlayStation parts as an aspect of the game. And you know what, if this game is $70, it wouldn't offend me, because the trailer said there's going to be like a lot of levels, so I'm looking forward to that full game, no matter how much it's going to be. But yeah, as a whole, it's pretty much proof that there wasn't really anything big coming to PlayStation this year, unless you consider Astrobot, which I do. And yeah, definitely looking forward to that. And Summer Game Fest is going to be interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, I think for me, it's Astrobot, Path of Exile 2, Until Dawn. Maybe Marvel Rivals, but I'm not looking to get into that many Overwatch clones.
Yeah.
Concord would probably be the one I would want to check out, but that'll depend on the price. Or whatever, but I could also see that being on PS Plus Extra at launch. That would definitely help them out there. So, but yeah, some neat stuff there. But yeah, I also wanted to end this talking about Summer Game Fest, the various shows they have going on around it. Because there is a bunch. If you go on the Summer Game Fest website, they do list quite a few. Mm-hmm. And a number of them that are sort of addressing, a lot of smaller showcases that cover segments of developers that you wouldn't necessarily see covered in these kind of events. Because like on Saturday, June 8th, they have a Latin American game showcase. That is a pretty cool idea for one of these. That'll be cool. So yeah, and then they follow it up shortly after with a women-led games showcase. So yeah, kind of addressing some of that stuff that you typically wouldn't see. There's a Wholesome Direct that's earlier that day. As well as, yeah, let's see what else is there. And the last one of that day is a future game showcase. That'll probably be some indie and smaller publisher stuff. But yeah, they kick off on June 7th with the main Summer Game Fest showcase, which I believe will have 2K has teased a new entry in one of their beloved franchises, which seems like it'll be the next BioShock game that they've been talking about. It's been in the works for a few years now. It seems like a good time for them to finally feel it, whether it's called BioShock 4 or some other subtitle. That'll probably happen. I do know they have the Atlas guys coming in to talk about something, so I imagine they'll showcase some of Metaphor ReFantazio.
Yeah, which I'm also excited for, so...
Yeah, so that'll be a big thing. I don't know what else he has teased happening that day, but you can probably expect a lot of things because they've talked about partners for the various showcases. Let's see. 2K, we talked about their big thing, Atlas. There'll probably be a bunch of stuff here. I haven't seen too much of what Jeff has hinted at on his Twitter. I think he's literally streaming right now on Twitch, answering questions from people. Mm. So he'll probably hint at other stuff that'll be happening here. What else do they have? Right after the Summer Game Fest showcase, Day of the Devs is on. So they'll be announcing a bunch of indie stuff there, especially now that Day of the Devs, as an event, is it fully independent from Double Fine and Microsoft.
Hmm.
So that's a cool aspect of that show now.
Hmm.
And I believe they are taking, I don't know if they do Patreon or some sort of donation to support them, their endeavors. So that'll be cool. And then Devolver Digital, as we talked about last week, is going to be ending that night with their showcase. I think it's 30 minutes. Volvi's 15th birthday party, as they're continuing that horrific monster character as a whole thing there. So there you go for that. June 8th, they have a bunch of showcases. They start off with the Future of Play Direct. That'll have some more indie and small publisher stuff. That's at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific. And then at 12 is the Wholesome Direct. 1 o'clock is the Latin American Games Showcase, 2:30 is the Women-Led Games Showcase, and then at 3 is the Future Games Showcase. That day. Sunday the 9th, we'll have mainly the Xbox Games Showcase. That starts at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be followed by the Black Ops 6 Direct that they've officially unveiled as the second part of that show. So find out more about what that game is doing. Then following that is the PC Gaming Show, their 10th anniversary. So that'll be interesting to see, 4 p.m. And then on June 10th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 p.m. Pacific, will be the Ubisoft Forward, which will probably be pretty interesting. They'll talk about the new Star Wars game, the new Assassin's Creed game, probably X-Defiant, whatever new characters they're adding to that. And that the rumors of that stuff seems really, really weird. If you don't know, that's basically a Call of Duty alternative free-to-play multiplayer shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Featuring like characters that are in line with the various like Tom Clancy games. You know, one from the Echelon from Rainbow Six, not Rainbow Six, Splinter Cell. One from the Ghost, Ghost Recon. One from the Rainbow Six team. You know, that kind of stuff. But if you were talking about like Rayman and some other characters, like how are you going to represent those as actual humans? You know, essentially Call of Duty people. But I'm sure they'll figure it out. But yeah, we'll probably get some of that stuff that'll be announced. And yeah, that's kind of be it. There's the Nintendo Direct, but that could be the week after.
Oh yeah.
Sometime later in June, we'll find out at a later time, but yeah. There'll be a bunch of stuff to check out there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Definitely looking forward to it. This will be my first time there. Smash Pad as a whole hasn't been invited to an E3-esque event since 2008. So that's hella years ago. And yeah, looking forward to checking things out. I'm going to the Summer Game Fest showcase, and then I have play days on Sunday and Monday. So a lot of smaller sites will be there on Sunday and Monday because sites like GameSpot and IGN have Friday, Saturday. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I do know IGN's doing an IGN Live thing where they're streaming like 8 hours a day every day during the weekend.
Yeah, so that's a premium event. IGN, you know, for their fans and whatnot, they'll be recording NVC and a bunch of other podcasts, having people on, you know, at the event. I don't know what to expect. I was invited to that too, but yeah, I'm not expecting much from that just because, like, you know, events like that where, you know, the public are invited are typically kind of rough. But looking forward to it anyway.
Yeah, I do know a couple of things that'll be announced there. The Power Wash Simulator devs have announcing whatever their next bit of content is at sometime in that 24 hours of streams. No real set time, but that'll be interesting. There's been at least a few other indies have said they're going to be on one of those IGN Live shows, so there'll be probably plenty of stuff that gets announced, but probably a lot of fluff, like the podcast stuff and probably some other interview stuff. So unless you're super dependent on, you know, getting a glimpse of everything or every bit of info, you can probably safely just wait for teams to just fully unveil whatever they're announcing, their trailers and all that. So, but yeah, that's a preview of what to expect. Maybe a bunch of stuff. So, next week's show will probably have a big list of things that got announced. So we'll probably primarily talk about that unless something else happens during the week. But I imagine most places are going to keep themselves quiet if they're not part of the showcases. So, but yeah, that'll do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon Dinner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with some more news from the Summer Game Fest. And everything that happens there. So, yeah, if you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also excited for announcements to come out of Summer Game Fest.
Yeah, there's definitely some I'm excited for, or at least hoping for.
Yeah, and hoping that Jeff Keighley does not get confronted on stage again by a random person. So I think they did okay at the Game Awards last year. So hopefully you can keep it going, make it two in a row. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. So have a good one.